Hello and welcome to Nodicast, the podcast on nonlinear dynamics, the essential theory that governs pretty much everything on Earth and beyond. I'm C. Nadaraj of Villanova University, senior editor and host of Nodicast. Nodicast is an outreach of Nonlinear Dynamics, the journal published by Springer Nature. Today, I'm having a very interesting discussion on the history, state of the art, and future of nonlinear dynamics in the field of mechanics with Professor Giuseppe Rega, who is well known in the field of nonlinear dynamics. Professor Rega is a professor emeritus at Sapienza University in Rome, Italy. This is an online conversation, and we are divided by the big pond we call the Atlantic Ocean. So please forgive me if the audio isn't pristine. This is actually part two of our conversation. Part one is what we called episode five. So if you have not listened to that one yet, you should probably start there before listening to this one. So let's get back to our discussion where we had left off in part one. So you said something about, to change the topic, you said something about turning point. You said maybe we're at a turning point in history in terms of how we can really, you know, use nonlinear dynamics, perhaps exploit nonlinear dynamics. What did you mean by that? Why do you think we are at a turning point in history? What technical achievements perhaps have come together, do you think?
I was a little bit generically talking more or less what we said already, in the sense that confronting ourselves more with finalized problems. I think that I know that in Europe it certainly happens, but maybe also in the United States, if you make a proposal focused on nonlinear dynamics, now maybe you don't get any more money. If you make a proposal focused on wind energy and role that nonlinear dynamics can play in that realm, maybe you can have a chance to get money. If you talk of artificial intelligence and machine learning and want to confront it with the contribution that nonlinear dynamics can give to that realm, maybe you can get money. So I am saying that nonlinear dynamics is playing somehow a role of important service in some sense.
Yes, yes.
It's not, yeah, yeah. Not only a status of important theoretical discipline in itself, which of course will continue to be important, but as an important role of support for better catching what is going on in other fields. So relation with control, relation with biosystems and so on. In this sense,
yes,
I am
yes.
saying is a kind of general statement, not a specific.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Then, of course, in specific applications, one can identify the specific contribution that can be done. But my talk was a little bit more general.
Okay, no, that's a very good point, actually. So in a sense, that's a sense of sign of maturity of the field.
In this sense, because, and it's important, I would say, also because for two reasons, both, both enlarging the audience, the environment. Our community is quite large, but not so large with respect to what is going on in the modern world. So one has to open the door. Some doors was opened more or less at the beginning of this century when micro and nano people started recognizing the role of non-linearities due to the activities of some of our colleagues, and now maybe other fields have to be affected by our initiatives. So this is also this is also what's happening with the journals. You know well how in the Journal of Nonlinear Dynamics now, I would say classical papers on nonlinear dynamics and mechanics are important, but are no more than 100% of the published paper. They are 50% or 40%, and the rest are concerned with problems in climate change, in population, in epidemiology, yes. And so on, which means confronting with, by using the tools of, confronting with other problems by using the tools of nonlinear dynamics. I would say that in this sense, the COVID time has brought a lot, an explosion of interest about nonlinear dynamics and the contribution it can give to clarifying a number of aspects. Do you think so? Do you agree? You have been working on that. I have not been working on that, but this is a role of service, I would say, a role of complementary information. So catching well the technical aspects, the technical epidemiological aspects or climate aspects, and making available the techniques and the tools and the concepts also, which only a nonlinear dynamicist can be able to show and to make available.
Yes. I mean, it's interesting. Before 2020, if you search for articles in nonlinear dynamics journal on epidemiology, probably it would have been one or two. Maybe one. You know, just talk about the fact that the endemic equilibrium, you know, you have the classic old logistics problem that gives you the non-zero equilibrium. And that was it. That belongs in a textbook, you know, for fundamental, simple equation. And then suddenly now we brought out what? Three special issues.
But I would say a little bit something more in this respect. As a person, I am a civil engineer. I was born as a civil engineer. Then I moved to mechanics, and then I moved to nonlinear dynamics, and so on. And I don't feel anymore myself as a civil engineer. but I am a man. In the area of mechanics, I would say that even mechanics in itself has to contaminate, has to hybridize with other scientific realm. Up to some decades ago, mechanics was maybe a core of science. Yeah. Yeah. Now it has one important science together with other, and so the concept of hybridization, in my opinion, is concerned not only with nonlinear dynamics in mechanics, but more general with mechanics, because we are no more or not only working on classical mechanical systems of mechanical engineering, aerospace, civil, and so on, but with many other mechanical systems in which dynamical problems are important, or non-mechanical systems in which dynamical problems are important.
I mean, the general field of dynamics, of course, evolved that way, you know, from mechanical dynamics to become general dynamical systems theory. So we've seen this over the last 400 years anyway. And, you know, and like you just point out, if you're able to understand or your area well enough, especially dynamical systems theory, you know, the world is full of it. So it's, you know, it is so obvious to look at the basic epidemiological model and realize it's a nonlinear system capable of exhibiting all the things that we want to do. And somehow it had escaped the attention of the nonlinear dynamics people to a large extent. And then the circumstances made it, interesting enough for people to solve it, I think. And I think that's fantastic, because if you look at in epidemiology, there were all these other papers that were written, which are primarily data fits. You know, here is the data from this country and it fits this particular numerical analysis model. And with all respect to them, it contributes little to the understanding. Whereas if you look at the kind of papers that are published in nonlinear dynamics or communication nonlinear science or any of the nonlinear dynamic journals, you know, the level of understanding you get is much higher. I mean, we included a dynamics of the social interaction way back in 2020. And, you know, which was very interesting to see how the social interactions as a dynamic plays a role in probably even oscillations that seem to persist, things like that. So I think we have a lot to contribute. So to the general field, knowing what we know.
Absolutely. From the mechanics viewpoint, in some sense, old people like me can feel a little bit discomfortable because one has to change the paradigms of his way of thinking. So one has to be open, fully open to cross-disciplinarity, fully open to cross-disciplinarity, which is really the advantage of having being growth in the nonlinear dynamics realm, because nonlinear dynamics is by definition cross-disciplinary. So in some sense, it helps you opening your mind and thinking of bio, thinking of artificial intelligence, thinking of climate and so on, where there is some mechanics, but not only it. Of course, biomechanics is important, but there is the problem of confronting with our medical colleagues. Of course, not all of them are able, or few of them are able to catch some points as we are unable to catch their points. So it's a matter of open mind. Is a big matter of open mind, I would say. Not closing also in educational term. Also in educational term, we should open incredibly our perspective, the perspective of our students, somehow revolutionizing also the teaching, the formation, the educational system.
I agree.
Of course, there are steps which can be made in long time, not in short one.
I mean, you know, it's interesting because I got caught up in your paper, reading paper. I read it a few times because this particular review was very interesting, but it leads me to think that you need a second article talking about so many other things outside of mechanics, but going out of mechanics. It's kind of, you know, it's it has roots in mechanics, but now, as we were discussing, there are so many.
Yes.
I mean, and you talked about funding, so I was just going to mention that I discovered that nonlinear dynamics by itself, and I'm pretty much in the applied nonlinear dynamics realm, but was less fund worthy, you know, and less interesting to funders. But I found that you cannot do fault diagnostics, you cannot find impending faults in complex systems without exploring the nonlinear dynamics.
Absolutely.
So that's a, you know, but fault diagnostics is a cutting edge field. They do want to fund it. They do want to understand it. And improves reliability, improves, especially in autonomous monitoring. Systems and so on. Yes, exactly. Monitoring and so on. So suddenly it became a hot topic. But our niche has been, you cannot just look at it as data. You have to look at the underlying dynamical phenomena that helps you gauge why something is going on, not just this is happening. And, you know, so this is another way that nonlinear dynamics that you refer to is hiding in so many places that you need to understand well enough to be able to, you know, understand why the system behaves in a certain way.
Think, for instance, also to all the developments for the new materials, the so-called metamaterials, in which a number of wave problems are still addressed without thinking of nonlinear effects. And so the contribution that nonlinear dynamics can give in better describing the instability of those materials, which are new ones, which are conceived and designed in an artificial way by realizing by properly tailoring some configurations in order to obtain some results. But for obtaining some results, some wanted results, one has to control in a proper way some wave propagation effects and so on, and nonlinear dynamics come into play in that respect. And people who are conceiving and designing new materials are not aware of phenomena of nonlinear dynamics phenomena. So collaboration in this respect is just developing now, in these years, I would say. That one is also a field in which a lot can be done.
So I have an Odicast episode planned on metastructures, metamaterials.
Good, very good.
Sometime in January.
Very good.
So because I'm very fascinated by this area. And like you said, there is a creative element to it. You come up with your own structure, essentially a material. So now, you know, again, there is an opportunity to use a nonlinear dynamics to come up with something that's more optimal, but you have to understand it first.
Yes, of course.
Before you can.
Of course.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, you cannot ignore it, definitely.
I would say that in all these cross collaborations, there is a preliminary step of sharing language, concepts, and aims to be pursued, and then of course the collaboration can develop in a splendid way and can furnish a lot of good results. But there is a kind of transition period in which one must know each other and accept different ways of thinking,
yes,
and so on. Yes, in yes. this sense, is also a transition, I would say.
Yes,
in
yes.
this sense, is yes, also yes. a turning point, I would say, not only for nonlinear dynamics, but also for the realms with which it is confronting, to open their mind to the effects of non-linearities in a dynamic environment where everything more or less, in an evolutionary environment in which more or less everything develops from bio to micro to machine learning and so on. Do you agree?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, I'm smiling because I've been working with doctors in a lot of our biomedical work over the last 15 years. And our conversations are always interesting because it took me about 4 years to understand many of the words they were using.
Yes, in fact.
And translate it in my engineering way. You know, this is what it means to me. If I wrote it as an equation, this is the kind of response that I'm looking at. It took about 4 to 5 years. And I don't think I have conveyed the meanings of a lot of the things that we do to them, you know, even now after 15 years, because every now and then I have to go back to linear dynamics to explain what's going on. And that itself is fascinating and befuddling. It's quite confusing. Just simple resonance is difficult to comprehend if you never studied it. Simple linear resonance, you know. So imagine explaining this, you know. The only thing that comes somewhat intuitively is basic statics to somebody who's not schooled in physics. But once you get into dynamics, it becomes, you know, quite difficult to understand. So now you explain that. Now you explain the nonlinear effects and so on and so forth. I mean, we did a model for cardiopulmonary resuscitation, which included some nonlinear spring and with a cubic, with a fifth order nonlinearity, and then some hysteretic damping, which fitted the real data very well. Now we published a paper, but we're still trying to understand the nonlinear effects that, you know, come from this. And it's subject to periodic excitation, basically. And that's what CPR is. And, you know, you see all the effects there, and we're still trying to understand exactly what are we seeing. And in a sense, it's a problem because if I say this, you know, it takes about an hour to explain this in different words in a way that this other person who's very, very smart, you know, they're very smart people, understands. But then they say something, and now that takes me one day to understand what they mean by that. So it's like, you know, if I didn't know any Italian, it would be like me, you know, just speaking, you know, something, you say something in Italian, and it takes me one day to look it up in a dictionary to understand what's going on. And then I say something in English and you don't know that. And, you know, so it's very, very difficult to have a good conversation.
Absolutely.
So, you know, so this is, an impediment. It's a barrier to doing interdisciplinary work at a sophisticated level. I think the level that we are talking about. But worth doing.
For instance, I don't know what is your idea, but it seems to me, as far as I know, that the contribution of nonlinear dynamics to the field of to the bio field is still not clearly focused on some very, very practical purpose. Still,
that's right. That's
still
right.
Is at a level of understanding,
yes, yes,
catching,
yes.
Some effect and so on. Whereas actually there should be some knowledge, some preliminary knowledge also in a nonlinear dynamicist of what are the basics and the aims of activity, of a joint activity with bio people. Otherwise,
right,
one cannot realize practical goals, obtain practical goals, which of course are concerned with the health of people and improving the medical situation and so on. So I think we are still a step forward in understanding each other in some sense.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, that's something we can have another conversation about, because So I'm writing an invited article for nonlinear dynamics right now on how do we use nonlinear dynamics for diagnostics, you know, which is one of the practical things you're talking about. I mean, the key practical things you can talk about in medicine are diagnostics, you know, finding what's wrong, and treatment. knowing what's wrong, you know, what is the effect of a treatment. And a lot of the treatment is essentially a nonlinear interference with a nonlinear system.
Yes.
So, you know, so what does it do to the system? I think we are very far from understanding treatment, but we have been struggling to do some of this for diagnostics. But you know, the overall field, I think, is, like you said, has a lot to do, has a long way to go, because one of the reasons, I think, is because a lot of the nonlinear dynamical understanding we have of physiological processes is at a very elemental level. You know, we understand how a neuron functions, but we don't understand why depression happens. So, you know, if we subscribe to, you know, Descartes and our conventional way of thinking, we think that the macro behavior of something we see is due to a lot of micro behavior that adds up together and you know, exhibits this complex behavior at the macro level. But we haven't solved this problem. So we may understand why, you know, how the action potential works in terms of the, you know, at the cellular level in the cardiac muscle, but we don't clearly know how that translates to the heart stopping, cardiac arrest. You know, we cannot predict these macro events. When I say we as a community, we haven't done the work towards that. And unfortunately, all of our diagnostics today is mostly at the macro level. You know, you go take your blood test or you go get your EKG. It's all a macro level information that we have. So we are being asked to, we are asking the doctors to make a deduction, an inference based on a macro level information. But at a micro level, we understand a little bit of the nonlinear dynamics. So there is a huge, you know, gap of understanding that has not been. So this is my, you know, analysis.
There is a big matter of scale.
Scale, exactly.
Big matter it's of a scale, scale in this kind of problems.
It's a scale, right? Yeah. So in a sense, it's like, I think in mechanics too, we have this, but at a macro level, we've developed understanding quite well. Right? We understand, you know, we can do, you know, Hooke's law, which is a macro behavior, right?
But and the micro one is different, of course.
It's different, yeah.
Because we don't have we have few basics on that, and so
exactly.
It's quite difficult
exactly.
to transfer, to link, to properly link the two scale levels. I agree with you.
Yeah.
I fully agree with you.
So you know, that's sort of the focus of the article writing right now. So you know, hopefully if we get it finished by January.
Good.
This is a good point for us to take a break. We'll be right back after this announcement. You are listening to Nodicast, a lively podcast on nonlinear dynamics, covering the latest research on new methods, exciting applications, and breakthroughs. I'm C. Nadaraj from Villanova University, your host. Nodicast is an outreach of Nonlinear Dynamics, the journal published by Springer Nature. Okay, now let's get back to our conversation.
Is there any topic that you want to you wish to discuss, Giuseppe? We kind of covered the paper mostly, the high level, but anything, you know, technical?
No, I would say that I have always worked on deterministic systems, so nonlinear dynamics in deterministic systems. And in the last few years, I am a little bit working on stochastic systems. And stochastic nonlinear systems. And this is extreme.
So they're stochastic in terms of excitation or the...
Everything. Either in terms of excitation or in terms of properties of the system, material, geometric imperfections, and so on. And so this is another field in which one has to mix knowledge coming from different realms, because one has to mix mechanics, one has to mix some functional analysis, some statistical physics, information coming from the probability theory, and so on. And this become very important for choosing the proper approach. For instance, it is important. We are catching that it is important to use some proper operators approach coming from functional analysis to describe in a proper way the global effects occurring in stochastic nonlinear systems, stochastic dynamical nonlinear systems. Otherwise, they cannot be caught. For instance, the fact that the notion of attractors is no more clearly defined, but one has to move to a different definition of attractors, like probability of attractors, or the Basin boundary. It is no more well defined as a smooth or fractal one, as in the deterministic nonlinear dynamics, but one has a kind of boundary between basins in such a way that one has to think in terms of probability of an attractor or probability of belonging to a certain basin of attraction.
This is like a quantum mechanization.
Yes.
It's like a quantum mechanization.
So yeah. Also in this sense, one has to mix again, to hybridize classical deterministic nonlinear dynamics with other fields and building something new in some sense. Of course, people working in probability are well aware of this of this problem, but people working in the deterministic realm do not know well. So one has again to mix expertises and try to catch the proper to describe in the proper way the effects of perturbations, uncertainties, and so on. And in this thing, I think that because, as you know, maybe you certainly know that the role of perturbations, uncertainties, in classical mechanics, if one thinks of work of Keuter, for instance, they were extremely well addressed decades ago. But only focusing on how a critical buckling value, for instance, is affected by the presence of a perturbation. Now, for big systems and in global dynamics terms, one has to also describe how a manifold is affected by the presence of a perturbation, which means how an attractor or a stable manifold or a sequence of bifurcation and so on. And so the problem becomes more complicated also in mathematical terms. And so again, one has to mix expertise or confront with new, at least for me, new information, new knowledge. And I think is another field in which a lot has to be done.
That's fascinating. So, I imagine you're looking at, you're under some restrictive assumption. So you're looking at, for example, Gaussian distributions.
Yes, of course, yeah, okay.
Yes.
Starting with Gaussian, and then starting with Gaussian.
Yes. Yeah, which is that's fine. So, and these are, would you start with things like Duffing type nonlinearities, typically?
Duffing type nonlinearities, but all Duffing, quadratic, cubic, but also other kind of nonlinearities like those arising in microsystems, for instance, in which yeah. the role of uncertainty is quite important, because due to the extremely small size
yeah.
and to the multiphysics nature, there are a lot of uncertainties, and so yeah. it is important to deal yeah. with those kind of problem with the proper tools, proper statistical and probabilistical tools, which means getting some knowledge from other realms, at least for me.
Yeah, no, that's fascinating. You know, a lot of us are just taught deterministic mechanics, you know, that's what I studied, except for a class in random vibration, you know, random vibrations, which was okay, which is an introduction to probability and understanding what probability means and statistical distributions and so on. But when I started to apply sort of integrate machine learning into everything, a lot of the work we were doing, that's when because machine learning, the proper name for it is really statistical learning theory. So that's really what it is.
Yes.
But when I started to do that, I realized, and working with real data, that, you know, it's a big lapse, because the world is a statistical distribution. Everything we do is a statistical distribution. So really, really, I think I'm just summarizing that what you're doing is very important work. So I think that'd be fascinating, and I look forward to seeing exciting results coming from
one
that.
One has to think in terms of distribution, no more in terms of Dirac point.
Yes, Dirac point. That's what it is, right? It collapses into one point, right? So, you know, also did some work in, like I was telling you about robotics, like mobile robotics. In mobile robotics, a lot of the navigation and everything is really probabilistic. That's the only way to do it. Even things like, you know, localizing yourself for mapping, things like obstacle avoidance, it's all done in terms of probability. That's the best way of doing it. So we designed, worked, and implemented probabilistic navigation on real working boats. And it's really fascinating how the probability, when you consider probabilistic description, suddenly everything starts working. When you have, and then you realize how sensitive it is to real, just individual values. You just put some values and you design something, then you completely miss the target. When you come up with a probabilistic distribution, typically in a Bayesian framework, where you update based on new information, which is interesting, because again, Bayes' theorem is very old in mathematics; it's over 100 years old. But I remember studying this as an undergraduate, as a probability class or something in one test, and it's over; it's forgotten after that. Then it comes back and you realize it's so useful and so important in the context of everything we
Absolutely.
Do.
Absolutely.
So, I think it's...
This is another bridge wonderful. to be built between different areas. Deterministic areas, nonlinear dynamics and stochastic nonlinear dynamics. In our conferences, people from the deterministic area, some very good colleagues were present from stochastic, but they were kind of exceptions.
Yes,
it's not possible anymore.
So you're going to be presenting something? Yeah. Sorry, I spoke over you because you cut out for some reason for me. Would there be a session in the nonlinear dynamics conference, you think, on stochastic nonlinear?
Actually, there is still a session in all. Yeah. I would say that already in the past 20 years, in the most important conference, there has been always a session or a symposium on random dynamical systems. But I think that the matter becomes more complicated again if one moves to global effects, if one is interested to describe not only local, but not only local bifurcations, but also their global effects. And further tools are needed, further knowledge is needed, I would say. And all of these has important consequences also in terms of design, because in terms of design, if one thinks of the recommendations, standards and so on, one could even say that many of them are still based on a linear way of thinking. So one has to bring inside the nonlinear way of thinking and the global way of thinking, the dynamical way of thinking, and the local and global way of thinking. So various steps have still to be done in order to affect prescriptions made by codes, recommendations. If one in many fields still some safety factors are introduced are introduced when one knows what happens and one does not know what happens, and so one introduces safety factors. Maybe in the future we should overcome this kind of approach and becoming well aware of the actual nonlinear phenomena playing a role and being capable of taking them into account and controlling them, and in this way reducing the effect of safety factors and better using and taking advantage of all the potentialities that a system of a structure can offer, which means implementing and improving the use of technological systems also. But it's a long story, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I like to, I've always called factor of safety as factor of
ignorance. Of course. I agree. I fully agree with you, of course. People want to stay quiet.
Yeah. You know, I had a professor, Professor Wallace, who was really brilliant. And he used to say, he taught me a couple of classes. One was random vibrations. And in that class, he used to say, there is nothing that's deterministic. First time I heard somebody tell me this, because I always assumed that, you know, as an undergraduate, as a graduate student, he said, nothing is deterministic. We just call it deterministic because we don't know, you know. So, and even statistical is really, you know, we put distributions, everything, only because we don't, it's all a level of ignorance that we are qualifying using these words, right? So it's a good way. I mean, I have a book in Vibrations where I start out saying every system is continuous, distributed parameter, nonlinear, time varying, stochastic, and you know. But
then one can sell many of these attributes and remain only.
right. Exactly. So you know, you just have to. I mean, but you know, it's. So another thing that I always say is, you know, as engineers, what we do, especially engineers, when confronted with a problem we cannot solve, we come up with a problem we can solve and then spend the rest of the time convincing somebody else that this is the problem they should be solving, not the other problem, the real problem.
But this is, one can say that this is the core of the modeling issue, which anyway. Plays an important role, and so this is one of the other important items that have to be considered when thinking of data-driven approaches. I don't like maybe I am wrong, but I don't like to hear that the data-driven approach to solving problem is a model-free approach. I would say that the data-driven approach should aim at build a model, a data-driven based model. The model should always exist, but of course can be data-driven instead of principle-driven, instead of mechanics principle-driven. So I don't know if you agree.
Yes, yes. I mean, 100%. So I've been doing this now for 15 years, so this is not new. And from the beginning, I've called it database modeling, not data model-free, database modeling.
But so, someone says model-free, which is wrong, incorrect.
I don't like that. I don't like that because, so, you know, the idea is that the model doesn't have to be a differential equation, right? So the model is an abstraction that helps you predict how the system behaves, for example, you know, in the future. So you however you do this, right? You get an understanding from its behavior using whatever techniques in order to predict its future behavior. You know, you got its past behavior, so you predict its future behavior. That's the essence of dynamics. So, you know, we shouldn't forget that all our so-called, what you call principle-based, you know, modeling or principles, which, you know, I could call it physics-based, let's say physics, chemistry, whatever. But these are, of course, all empirical. They were all derived from data, from observation of data. And we now have sufficient certainty in them that we call them laws. You know, we call them Newton's laws of motion, applicable and valid within certain bounds of velocity and mass and so on. That it doesn't go into relativistic speeds and so on. So we put bounds on it and say we can just use them. So, you know, the so-called data-based methods are really doing the same thing. They just have a lot more data and, right? So, you know, to kind of, I agree with you 100%. I think people who say model-free, they're, in my opinion, they are distorting the meaning of their technique. You know, what this technique is trying to do. It's trying to give them an abstraction that helps them build a, you know, build a model. That's really what it's doing. Build a predictive basis for behavior prediction, for control, for design, whatever. So, and that's what we call a model. What else is it, you know? So absolutely, absolutely. I feel strongly about it too. So I absolutely agree with you. Yeah.
If one think of a model-free approach based on data, one is thinking of every kind of problem as a different one. Which in some part is true, because of course the sets of data differ from one case of the to the other. But I think that one should not give up to some kind of generalization, finding some kind of rules also data-driven approach. I'm not expert in data-driven.
No, you got it. You got it. Absolutely right. So, you know, there is a concept called generalizability in machine learning, which is basically you use this data to build your model. And now how well does it predict, how does it fit some new data that you have not seen before? And that's, of course, what we do with Newton's laws. You know, I don't have to do an establish Newton's law in a new pendulum in my lab. I already know it obeys Newton's laws. So it's already generalizable. You know, we know it's generalizable. So, and that's because the rule we came up with, F equal to MA, has integrated this generalizability in it, that it's a robust enough model that now I can trust it. So that is really the goal of machine learning models too. You know, you want it to be a so robust that I can now trust it and use it in situations where I'm not seen that before.
Of course, with some limitation, having clear the kind of the range of reliability and the kind of application which can be addressed with that paradigm.
Exactly. I mean, so we may say Newton's law of viscosity, but we do know that there are non-Newtonian fluids, you know, so, you know, there's a so-called law of viscosity. However, there are conditions where it doesn't apply. So it's the same thing.
Yes.
So I look at it from a very holistic point, from the same point of view, you know, and look at it as a potential useful technique, provided you don't lose exactly what you said, you don't lose sight of this essential need to see some underlying rule that exists in this dynamic system that you're trying to, you know, discover or model, you know, whatever. So absolutely.
Not everything can be empirical.
Yes.
Of course, empirism is important, but we have some century of methodology behind us, and we should not dismiss it.
No, you know, it's, I mean, we have Navier-Stokes equation that was derived, you know, Reynolds tribology equation, I mean, lubrication equation, right? I mean, we have, you know, absolutely. I mean, absolutely. And that's what we built our technology on, right? We got,
in fact,
pretty good technology. So
I agree.
So this has been, anything else you want to say, Giuseppe? Because this has been very, very enjoyable.
Not for the moment. Maybe I will remind something later, but as it usually happens.
Happens to me too.
As it usually happens. But maybe we had nearly two hours. You will cut properly, of course. We'll cut.
No, we'll keep a lot of it. It may come out to be two episodes, I think. I think so. So
maybe you.
So we'll see.
You have a cut a number of steps, but anyway, I hope it seems to me that we touched some interesting points.
Thank you for your time. Thank you for your wisdom. Sharing your knowledge.
No, absolutely. It has been very, very intriguing and interesting talking with you. You also have a lot of experience and a lot of work.
I don't know.
Nice work done. So it has been really a pleasure. And you have experience on topics on which I've never worked directly. So like machine learning, biomechanics, and so on. I am a more traditional person, also due to my origin, yes, in some sense.
Well, you know, I mean, just so happened, I think. I don't take any credit for that. And maybe this gives us an opportunity to maybe work together sometime. I would love to do that. So you're, I think.
Absolutely, absolutely. Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Ciao.
Ciao.
This concludes part two of my conversation with Professor Giuseppe Rega on nonlinear dynamics in mechanics, its past history, and state of the art. We also speculated about the future course of research, lauded some current developments, as well as bemoaned some gaps in our current understanding. This was really a wide-ranging discussion, and I absolutely had a blast. I honestly could have kept talking for a few more hours with Professor Rega on this. I hope you likewise enjoyed listening to it. Please feel free to send me feedback on this or any other episode. I would love to hear from you about suggestions so that Nodicast can become more of a community project. Thank you. The theme music is called Dynamic. It was composed by Stephen William Cornish and was crafted for us by Neha Nararaj. Nodicast is supported by a generous grant from Springer Nature. We appreciate it very much. And thank Anita Lekwani, Executive Editor at Springer, for everything she's doing to support, facilitate, and publicize these podcasts. And notably, we are deeply appreciative of Professor Walter La Carbonara, the Editor-in-Chief, for his enthusiastic support and encouragement. I'm C. Nataraj from Villanova University, your host of Nodicast. For more details, including links to panelists and papers, please visit the website nodicast.org. Thank you, folks, for spending the better part of the hour listening to us. Now go read some nonlinear dynamics papers, and I will see you next time. Bye-bye.